Playback on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Dublin Airport's Airport Club. Make travel effortless with lounge access, stress-free parking, fast-track security and exclusive duty-free savings.
Good morning. It wasn't a surprise, oh no. The world and its mother had predicted it. But when the bromance broke down, it was something to behold.
Elon and I had a great relationship. I don't know if we're well anymore. I was surprised because you were here. Everybody in this room practically was here as we had a wonderful send-off. He said wonderful things about me. You couldn't have nicer, said the best thing. He's worn the hat. Trump was right about everything. And I am right about the great, big, beautiful bill.
Or not, says Elon, hat on ground, being stomped on. A playground scrap played out on the world stage. On Morning Ireland, Washington correspondent Sean Whelan.
I guess you could say Elon Musk started it, at least during the past week or so, because he had been very critical of Donald Trump's spending bill that is going through Congress at the moment. It's sitting in the Senate awaiting ratification, but facing a lot of opposition there. But Donald Trump had restrained himself until yesterday afternoon when he was meeting with Chancellor Merz of Germany and was asked questions by journalists. It was their first opportunity to put things to him after this tirade by Musk, who'd tweeted about 70 times in the previous 24 hours attacking the president's bill, which is really fundamental to his presidency. And Donald Trump rose to the bait and let fly at Elon Musk. And the long-awaited, much-anticipated disintegration of the two men's relationship was laid public for all to see.
Putting on the popcorn, settling in with the cozies, you couldn't look away. With Claire, Washington-based journalist Sarah Firth.
Do you get the sense that Republicans are very nervous about all of this, or do they think it's just a row between two egos, let's move on?
Oh, I wish I could have recorded the responses. I was round the corner from the White House looking at TV screens for a couple of hours as this was playing out, with some very senior military personnel, and the eye rolls and the groans and the literal heads in hands at some of the headlines that were running and things that were being put out on social media. I mean, there was almost, honestly, the air of the ridiculous about some of the things that were being said. You know, you had Elon Musk's tech billionaire, President Trump, you know, making these accusations back and forth. And you had laughing face emojis from Elon Musk. You've had Trump claiming at one point in the White House when he was questioned, you know, because he was asked, this is the guy that you've asked the American people to trust with, you know, helping with spending in America, with helping control spending. And now you don't want us to trust him anymore. And Trump claiming, well, you know, this might be a case of Trump derangement syndrome. Once people leave the White House and leave his team, they become hostile. So I don't know, Trump derangement syndrome or a sort of billionaire breakup, either way, that has very significant implications. As I said, air of the ridiculous, but those consequences, you know, not just for the companies involved, NASA, SpaceX, Tesla, but for Congress, for this bill and for the global economy.
But as in all great love stories, maybe the makeup will be equally spectacular. Might a call be on the cards? On the news at 1, Amber Phillips, political reporter with The Washington Post.
Elon Musk really seemed to be the one yesterday, and both men think very openly on their social media platforms, taking a deep breath, I would say, and seeing how he could perhaps work with Donald Trump, or at least not publicly feud with him again. And so we'll see. I mean, if I were just, it looks like Elon Musk might think he has the most to lose by going after the president of the United States, who has a loyal base, and so they're going to talk.
And if he has the most to lose, where does that leave Trump politically now?
Yeah, it's a great question. You can have a dedicated base in American politics, and President Trump does. You need money. And Elon Musk was, as you said it well, just a bottomless pit of money for President Trump. He also had a ton of connections to the tech world that leans conservative here in America. It is something that Republicans further down the ballot are definitely stressing out about today.
But that call never did come to pass. And it's not looking too good, because on yesterday's Drive Time, well, this from Harriet Alexander, US-based journalist.
And then today, Donald Trump is saying, I might even sell my Tesla.
Yes, that's right. So you know, Elon Musk presented Donald Trump with this Tesla. It was a huge gesture a couple of months ago when Tesla was really struggling. People were firebombing Teslas across the country in protest at Musk's role. So Trump wanted to show his support for the company. But yes, now Donald Trump says that he will either give it away or sell it. He says he no longer wants it. Mm-hmm.
Gulp. Well, after all that, we can only go to Britney. Played on a parsnip. That magnificence was brought to us by the London Vegetable Orchestra, and joining the Darcy, Patrick Johns.
When did you discover you could make musical instruments from your vegetables, and what were you doing at the time?
Question of the week.
The orchestra started about 15 years ago when our chief recorder maker, Tim Cranmore, was asked if he could make music on a potato. He's been a recorder maker for 45 years, and someone approached him and said, it was a brand of crisps, and they said, we'd like to see if you can make music on a potato. So Tim recruited some students at the Royal Academy of Music, and they spent 3 days in the studio and came up with some music and thought, well, this is fun, let's carry on. And I got involved a few years later, but once you realise you can do it, it's kind of impossible to stop, really.
Not sure about that, but in case you're interested, he favours the yam.
I mean, it's disgusting to clean out. They're very sticky.
Yeah.
But they're big and cumbersome, and they make a really good bassy sound. So that's my favourite.
Uh-huh. So how do you tune it and all that sort of... You're all musicians, are you, basically?
Yeah, we're all professional musicians. Yes. And Simon Tong, who plays potato and courgette, and I are both brass players. He's a trumpeter, I'm a trombonist. So we make ourselves carrot mouthpieces, yeah, right, resemble trumpet and trombone mouthpieces, and then we buzz down them like we would a trumpet or a trombone, and into a hollowed out potato or swede or butternut, and from there we can tune it with our lips.
And lest you think, well, any root veg will do. Oh no,
I'm learning how to play the drums. I was thinking, say, a bunch of scallions on a half a cabbage head. Would that work?
Might do. I mean, to be honest, cabbages are, despite being smaller than pumpkins and things, do make a really good bass drum sound.
Do they? Right.
But I think you should go for pumpkin or as large a squash as you can, really. Yes. Hollow it out so you've got a nice resonating thing, but get yourselves a couple of parsnips or carrots.
Yeah.
And then you'll be able to make a great sound, I'm sure.
And what about celery sticks?
They don't last quite as long.
Oh, they don't. Oh, I see. Yes, no, they go limp. Yeah, they go limp.
Parsnips are great because one end is big and yes, chunky and makes a big sound, and the other end isn't too big, so you can grip it easily.
There you have it, both an art and a science. Into the cupboard with you now. A few fugues on a spud by next week, please. With Claire, Katie Piper. In 2008, at the age of 24, she was the victim of an acid attack by her ex-boyfriend. She now campaigns for greater awareness of people living with burns and scars. However, she also acknowledged that looks really do matter as much as we might protest otherwise. She talked about something called pretty privilege.
I didn't want to write a dishonest book that says, you know, it's all on the inside, that's what counts, you don't need to be beautiful to be happy, because I think you are right, there is such thing as pretty privilege, and the world does judge us on how we look, you know, it's those first few seconds when we meet people. So I definitely didn't want to write a self-help book that says, have a bubble bath, go for a run and you'll feel great, because, you know, that isn't how the world operates.
Her new book is called Still Beautiful and deals with perceptions of beauty and also ageing.
I think we all, not just women, men also, on a daily basis, feel bombarded with messages from society of we are not enough and we don't fit in if we don't have a certain face, body, status, bank account. And that really kind of eats away at people's confidence and self-esteem. And actually, that's beneficial for some companies and people selling products, because if we have high levels of self-esteem, we're not going to be buying all these beauty products, needing fast fashion, and, you know, being victim to whatever makes other people rich. Mm-hmm. So I found a way to develop, you know, deep confidence, inner core confidence, and that certainly wasn't going to be rocked a second time around turning 40. You know, to live longer and to still be here is definitely not a negative thing.
Well, you absolutely understand that, because, you know, your experience and the health challenges that you faced, you have faced your mortality over the years many times.
Yeah, it was really interesting because as I approached this sort of significant birthday, as people call it, lots of journalists were saying to me, do you mind if we print your real age? Are you going to tell people your real age? And how are you feeling about turning 40? And I sort of found this reaction amusing. And then when I really sort of reflected on it, I found it quite sad, because I thought, actually, this is inevitable for all of us. Like, getting older should be a celebration of life. And I think what we do, particularly around the decade of our 20s, we really romanticize that period of people's lives. We say it's our heyday, the best time in our life. But I think actually, if most of us look back on our 20s, it rightly so was a time for mistakes, and it was a time for experiences, and we wouldn't necessarily carry those experiences into the next decade. And actually, I think when we get sort of 30s, 40s and beyond, it's a time when we're setting boundaries, we're more assertive, and for many people, we're more financially secure. And really, our heydays, actually, if we look at it, are our 40s, 50s, 60s and beyond.
Katie Piper with Claire. And on services ahead on Bank Holiday Monday, Brenda Donoghue spent 24 hours at the Galway Plaza off the M6 on the Galway to Dublin motorway, and the people she met were fascinating. This woman was waiting on a friend to go for a walk.
I'm Mary Barlow and I live in a little village called Glinsk. And I'm actually an architect. So I worked for a good number of years, and then I fell in love with my next door neighbour, and he's a farmer. Now we're a fully organic farm. We're certified since 2006.
And Brenda, sniffing for a story, got right into the business end of this union.
He brought me to school when I was a child.
Stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there an age difference then?
There is a small age difference. It was very unusual in the fact that my husband calls our marriage a merger. Because he actually increased his farm by marrying me, because there was two girls in my family and my parents divided their farm equally between the two of us.
So he was your next door neighbour. Then you got half of your own farm.
Yes.
And by marrying you, he got an extra half of the farm.
He did. He got quite a substantial amount. Yeah, and then I suppose I...
And was it for love then?
Oh, it was for love. But you see, when you're getting married, you see, Brenda, you really have to look at the qualities of the person that you're getting married. It's okay to go out at different people when you're going for a bit of fun and a fling or whatever. But I carefully chose my husband, that he would be intelligent and hardworking and a good sense of humour, and he'd be somebody that I could trust and somebody that I could get on very well with, and somebody that I really knew. But there was love, but there was a certain amount of thought, I suppose you could say, in it as well.
And all that sounds very logical and rational. And then you hear this.
So the merger happens, stroke marriage. Have you children?
Yeah, we have 8 children. So it was a good, productive marriage. And we have 8 children. And then when our youngest child was 5, I was wondering what would I do with it, because I really didn't want to be in the house really on my own. So I just picked up the local newspaper when he went to school and they were looking for foster carers. And I applied. Jimmy and I got approved as foster parents. And then we've, you know, children coming and going ever since. And that's 18 years ago. And that has been the most rewarding thing we have done. Yeah, we have seen huge changes in the children that came through our door, because we are very relaxed and the farm is very therapeutic. It's very hard to explain what a farm does to people. It just calms them, brings out the best in them. It's slow moving, and all these children came from inner city and they had parents that had maybe, you know, different problems with addiction and everything, so that they were able to get away from that and they were able to start a new life for themselves. And they have done absolutely incredible, the children that have come through the door.
They've fostered over 30 children and some have stayed with them for quite a long time. It's been very special.
It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy for the child. It wasn't easy for us when we started off. But I would safely say that all my work as an architect and all my work as thinking about material things is really not important. Like what I've done with what we have done on the farm with people is really what I'm going to die happy having achieved. You know, and I even feel more happy about being a foster parent than I do about being a mother. Because being a mother kind of really, you know, kind of happened in a way.
But you don't have much choice.
Yeah, but being a foster parent was a decision. Great to love dogs and cats and everything, but there's an awful lot of people out there, children out there, that really do need love.
Mightily impressive. And then Mary headed off for her walk. Back in a bit. Welcome back. This week, an RTE Investigates programme uncovered multiple examples of care failings and neglect of vulnerable older residents at the Residence Port Laois and Benevan Manor in Glasnevin in Dublin, two nursing homes run by MEs Ireland. Morning Ireland played this clip where Aoife Hegarty describes how an elderly man in Benevan Manor in Glasnevin is refused access to the bathroom. And this clip is hard to listen to, so bear that in mind.
It's night time at Benevan Manor, and the same man is being put to bed.
That's bedtime.
Hours later, at 4:30 in the morning, he wanted to use the toilet. But he again was denied, this time by a nurse.
What we are doing? I'm going to get your sheet. We don't have enough sheet, okay? We don't have enough sheet, okay?
Listen.
But what?
I have to put it to my number, I am one.
Number one, yeah?
Yeah.
That's fine, you can. I don't have anyone to help you, so you can wear your pad and we will change it, okay? You can pee on. Can you put your trousers up? Yeah. You can pee on that, okay? Yeah, you can pee on that. We will change that, okay?
Left alone, the man could be heard calling out for help.
Hello? Hello there.
But no one responded.
Morning Ireland's Joe Caulfield got this reaction from Sean Moynihan of older persons charity Alone.
I think, you know, it's been said many times, you judge a society how it treats its older people. And tonight we got a shock, a very visible shock to how we're treating maybe the older or more vulnerable. International research from many countries shows that privatisation of care leads to poorer outcomes. We have done that because we don't have a policy. And ultimately, the companies that are running it are big multinational companies that control thousands, and they have become more and more powerful within our system. The reality is we don't have a policy about what we're doing with care for older people. We aren't responding in a way that is quick enough to respond to the needs of older people. We're walking into the privatisation of nursing home care and home care without any due thought of what is in the interests of the older people, where other age groups like disabilities are decongregating. We are congregating older people in bigger and bigger facilities to make them economically viable. And so the economics of this seem to be more important than the actual rights of the older person and the healthcare of the older person.
Also on Morning Ireland, Ciarán O'Donnell, Minister of State for Older People. Mary put this to him.
Did HICWA fail the residents of those nursing homes?
Well, for what we saw last night, HICWA have a body of work. They're an independent body. But certainly from what we saw on that programme last night, one could not stand over. And that's why I want to see, and I impressed very much on HICWA yesterday, that I want to see redoubling of efforts, and that we cannot have a situation whereby we see you had that elderly man, you broadcast him in terms of reach out for people. That's wholly unacceptable. I can only imagine the torment he went through. And the family looking in and what has happened here. In my role as Minister for Older People, I want to ensure this never happens again.
Minister, you're sitting here this morning and you're saying to me that there are very good providers, and you could well be right, but how do you know?
87% of the nursing homes at HICWA audit, and the audit, every nursing home is audited every year, and some of them 3 and 4 times. 87% compliance. And people listening, and I want that message to go out. So we have a regulatory regime, but what was exposed last night on the programme is a wake-up call for everyone. And what I want to see at this stage is, for me, and you had Sean Moynan on there from Malone, I'm bringing forward a statutory home care scheme on the other side, and we're going to regulate. The first thing I'm doing is to regulate home care providers and bring forward that legislation.
But
as well.
Hold on, yeah, and I'll come back to that in a minute. But you know, HICWA said Ben Evan was compliant, yet what we saw last night, people left sitting in wheelchairs for hours, that completely against best practice, people being corralled into one room on certain floors, people being left without being responded to. Chronic staffing problems, lack of training for staff as well.
If you look at even the absolutely, if you look at the Portlaoise, the most recent report from HICWA, that spoke about lack of staffing, that spoke about inadequate training, and that all was manifest in the programme last night. So what I want to see at this stage in terms of those two immediate nursing homes is HICWA to the intensive engagement. We must make it safe for people. And in my role as Minister for Housing and working with...
And later in the morning, picking up on that interview, Claire spoke to Liam Doran, former General Secretary of the INMO and former member of the Sláintecare Implementation Advisory Council.
The Minister for Older People, Ciarán O'Donnell, was on Morning Ireland this morning, and he said, and he was at pains to point it out, he said it a couple of times, 87% of the homes audited by HICWA, he said, are compliant and provide great care for residents. Do you share his faith in that figure?
Absolutely not. And I would say back to the minister, gently but forcibly, compliant with what, minister? What exactly do we have in place, underpinned by legislation, with regard to the care of the older people services, that ensures that care is being met? We don't have minimum standards. We don't have legislative skill mix between registered staff and unregistered staff. We don't have guarantees about occupational therapy. So what are we compliant with? I mean, I've seen a lot of these comments about their compliance. Or what are they? And when they're not compliant, what are they not compliant with? Because there are no standards for care of the old. There's words, and I can read out to you now. One of the words, the standards that HICWA have, at all times there are sufficient numbers of staff with the necessary experience and competencies to meet the needs of residents, which reflect the size, layout and purpose of the service. Well, I have to say to you, I have no confidence that as a uniform norm, we have that type of staffing structure in place in our private nursing homes across the country this morning.
Yeah, I was looking back.
And then Liveline. Calls from older people fearful of being subjected to such poor care. Adult children anxious and worried for their elderly parents. And also nursing home staff shocked by what they'd seen and ashamed for their profession. The programme opened with Patricia, Director of Nursing at Nightingale Nursing Home in Ahaskra in County Galway.
It was traumatic to watch it. I mean, I watched it with the lady that owns the nursing home here. She's dedicated her entire career to looking after older people. And she turned to me at one point and she said, have I wasted my life? You know? And I'm here 16 years and I'm wondering, what am I doing? You know, at the end of the day, I know, okay, this was pertaining to a particular organisation. But at the end of the day, the broader public out there are going to treat it the same as they treated Lees Cross. It's going to be every nursing home is the same. They're all bad. They're all money grubbers. The care is dreadful. And that just isn't the case.
However, it was around the matter of HICWA inspections that Katie had questions.
We have learned. We've learned from Lees Cross. We've learned from the introduction of HICWA into the equation.
But Patricia, I have to say, just on exactly that, like, I think the difficulty that emerged from last night's programme is that in one of those homes, if you had looked at the HICWA reports from that nursing home, and it was very, you know, it was they had people in there, they had they were listed, you know, that they were compliant again and again and again. So there is now an issue, I think, for a lot of people was, can we trust these HICWA reports now?
I understand that comment, but at the end of the day, it's very difficult when you have a situation where, I don't know, a team of two or three inspectors, whatever it is, goes into a facility on a given day. I mean, all they're taking is a snapshot, really, of that facility and the care being delivered in that moment. You can't really know a situation unless you're embedded in the situation. And I mean, at the end of the day, a policy can say anything. A response to a report can say anything. Paperwork can say anything.
And then on Drive Time, more revelations.
The residents in Port Leisha breached a restriction on admissions imposed by HICWA earlier this year. Essentially, Cormacit was told to stop taking older people in last February amid concerns around the care provided at the facility. A formal notification issued in March and that restriction coming into effect on the 22nd of April. However, RTÉ's Aoife Hegarty has established how the residents had a flurry of admissions around and after that critical April 22nd date, prompting serious questions around the strength of the regulator.
And Barry brought us this detail about ME's Ireland, one of the largest providers of nursing home care in the country.
It's a French nursing home group formerly known as Orpea, and it's worth noting how four of the five largest providers of private nursing home care in Ireland are now French owned following a flurry of takeover deals between 2017 and 2021. ME's, formerly known as Orpea, entered the Irish market in 2020 and it changed its name to ME's after a scandal involving financial fraud and abuses, including the neglect of residents and the rationing of incontinence pads, a practice also uncovered in last night's RTÉ Investigates programme, how those were revealed in a book, Les Fossaires. Now, Orpea, as it was then, its shares slumped by 93% in 2022 following those revelations, and police raids were carried out on Orpea care homes in 2022 as well, while an independent audit found evidence of financial wrongdoing. Now, the company said it has taken steps to improve its business practice, while its Irish subsidiary says it wishes to make clear that ME's Ireland has absolutely no connection or involvement with any of the allegations made in France in 2022 and how its parent company continues to support it in every capacity required to serve the needs of its residents. But private nursing home sector, big money, although the four largest private operators have recorded losses in recent years, ME's recording a loss over the past 3 years of 223 million, whilst the Residence Port Leisha facility, that's actually owned by a Spanish healthcare investor, namely Activos, Healthcare Activos, which then leased it back to ME's. Healthcare Activos paid 56 million euro for a total of 332 nursing home beds across Port Marnock, Kilkenny, and Port Leisha in 2023, and it does have links as well to the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Abu Dhabi. So clearly, big money involved in this sector.
And as reported on Morning Ireland yesterday, the HSE has put national safeguarding teams and new directors of nursing in both the Residence Port Leisha and Benevan Manor in Glasnevin. And the HSA will carry out health and safety inspections at those two centres. Kieran O'Donnell, Minister of State for Older People, has also asked HICWA to review all 24 nursing homes run by ME's Ireland. But we will finish with this call from Liveline, when Susan phoned into Katie.
Susan, your dad is in Benevan Manor.
He is, yeah.
Just where are you right now?
I'm actually outside the nursing home in my car. I didn't want to speak in the room.
So, had you any idea of what was coming down the tracks?
Not at all. We wouldn't have come over here. My dad wouldn't be here. Nothing. This is totally out of our jurisdiction, regardless of his care needs. But we would not have come over and viewed a room here, knowing we didn't know this program was coming here.
Tell me, how long has your dad been in there?
3 weeks tomorrow.
Oh, so you just made the big decision and thought you had done the right thing.
Well, we just took a little sigh of relief and said a small little bit of respite. Took a big sigh and then thought he was getting on okay. And then this, I knew there was a programme coming up through watching the ads on RTE. And then yesterday morning, and having a cup of tea at 6:10, it came up on RTE. It was Ben Nevin Manor. And my daughter just heard me saying, oh no, oh no, oh no. And I just started crying.
What are you going to do, Susan?
For starters, I think we're going to have a meeting this week, myself and the brothers out here. I'm going to arrange that today. Me personally, I am his decision-making representative. And I actually feel, and I'd imagine my two brothers feel as well, I feel that my trust has been really, really breached.
Yeah. I just can't imagine sitting through last night's programme if you had somebody in there.
I put my father in these people's hands. And the actual man that we had the talk with, the interview, I actually looked him in the eye and I said to him, can I trust you? Because I'm handing you my father.
Susan, the very best of luck with whatever decision you make and the very best of luck to your father. And thank you. Thank you for getting in touch with us today. Talk to Joe on
0818715. From Liveline. And if you need them, rte.ie/helplines. Back in a bit. Welcome back. Us Irish, we have a long, intricate and involved history. All of which means not a lot when it comes to making television.
8,000 years of Irish history into 4 hours. Fair play to you.
Oh, gosh, don't even talk.
Professor Brianna Nicdiarmada with Dermot Whelan. And she's the historian behind From That Small Ireland, a new TV series narrated by Colin Farrell. And they are going right back to the beginning here on this island. Well, as far as the Bronze Age anyway, and the remains of a skeleton known as Rathlin Man.
The general consensus on the team here this morning was that he looks quite like a hipster barista. That if he's knocking around,
spot on actually,
Randall, yeah. You know, with a rolly in his hand, you'd be like, okay, yeah. But yeah, really interesting. And we were quite dark skinned back then. Our ancestors had darker skin. We associate freckles and all that with Irish skin, but it wasn't always the way.
Yeah, well, this particular individual had lighter skin tone. And of course, this is a hugely controversial area. I mean, my goodness, you draw everybody out from under stones when you start talking about this stuff.
Really?
But Rathlin Man had, so they were able to prove from this DNA that he was part of a group of people who'd come from what's known as the Pontic Steppes, basically Russia and Ukraine today. So these people moved after about 4,000 BC. They moved across Northern Europe and they ended up on Irish shores.
Yeah.
Like so these were the people they brought with them, we think, a Celtic language. So this individual, they were able to prove that this individual is really one of our genetic ancestors.
Okay.
So he had, you know, reasonably fair skin, brown eyes, although he had the gene for blue eyes as well, but his eyes were brown. But also he was lactose tolerant. Which means he could drink, his diet was primarily milk and dairy. And again, that adds up to evidence of a strong presence of dairying in the country. You know, we should have gone to the dairy board, I think, for sponsorship because, you know, this idea that Ireland
right
is
back.
Right back to prehistory.
And Dermot, with a degree in archaeology, by the way, well, he was really, really into this subject.
You talk about these big movements of people and you kind of wonder, you know, one civilization there and then the next minute, in inverted commas, it's gone.
Yeah,
you know, we don't really know what causes these big shifts in populations, do we?
We actually don't know at all. Yeah. And it's a big debate among archaeologists and again, I suppose, with this ancient DNA. So, for example, there was that earlier group of farmers, the very first farmers who came, would have looked quite different and their DNA was quite different and they would have had darker skin, more sallow skin, I should say. And when I asked Professor Bradley in Trinity, well, what would these people have looked like? He said, we'll go to Sardinia.
Really?
Yeah. So wow.
There's everybody listening is like, God,
I want to be in Sardinia.
Why can't we get more of those genes? The sallow skin Irish is something that we'd love to be.
Yeah, those genes are gone. They went out of history. Now, again, I said we don't know why. But then this new group, I said, this there was a 95%, you wouldn't call it displacement, but a change in population.
It could be weather events or many things we don't have.
Weather events,
it
could be better technology. Yeah. You know, they had access to horses, for example. So we don't really know. It's very fascinating and interesting.
Fascinating stuff. That was Professor Brianna Nicdiarmada and the TV programme From That Small Island. Over on Arena, Every Blooming Thing, a spoken word roadshow featuring poets Colm Keegan and Aaron Fornoff. They joined Ricochet in for Sean. Optimism, positivity, bit of a hard sell.
Positivity, like, it's a kind of cliche. Like, even myself, I was going on Instagram and trying to say, oh, you know, let's be grateful. And I was getting annoyed at myself because, like, it's like in Ireland, it feels like, what are you being grateful for? Shut your mouth, you know? But then I was like, there's a lot to be grateful for. Shut your mouth and get up and do something. Like, celebrate the people around you, compliment the people around you, help the people out there who are really trying to make a difference. These are challenging times, and it's like that Brecht thing, you know, what we do in the dark times, we'll sing of the dark times. But there's also, like Aaron was saying, there's something that really needs to be stood up for, defended and celebrated about what it means to be human, you know. Like, at the centre of this is a poem, Spring Shine. I wrote that poem on a random Tuesday in my house, and I didn't even realise a couple of years later that house was gone. Everything had flipped, and I'm so glad I saved that moment. You know, I kind of rescued a random Tuesday from oblivion, and I still have it now, 10, 15 years later.
Maybe you'll read Spring Shine for us.
The house compacted, then opening up so fast like a popcorn kernel or a stop-motion flower, exploding with my laughter after my four-year-old son's first joke, wit like a whip crack snapping out of his mouth. In the hall, my daughter spins into her dream of being a gymnast. She flips back, she bends and unfurls herself. The room is stored with her energy. I see her aura moving through the air like slow-motion orbs of water. Her older sister has curled up on the couch, stares into her phone, opens herself as pixels, her feelings sent as letters to an invisible boy. When the tick turns green on her screen, what comes in reply is like a bomb going off in her endocrine system. She walks to the kitchen. Her mother is making spaghetti bolognese. No frills, just the sauce from a jar. Some mints. We like it simple. The steam of it on the walls, the drone of the extractor fan, the small ceremony of cutlery thrown across the table. The daughter helps and can't help smiling. The mother doesn't know why, but smiles as well. This is the soft machine of our life. Last night, the house was warm, and this morning sunlight woke us one by one, and the noise of a tin hurtling across the green outside, gunning a scrambler, accelerating, feeling the wind in his hair. Inside the engine, small bursts of fire, while his tyres run over the grass. In the dark beneath this all, new bulbs push hard against the clay.
Beautiful. That was Spring Shine from poet Colm Keegan on Arena. And for writer Kevin Barry on Roots on Bank Holiday Monday, his very first gig. Well, let's just say it wasn't the Backstreet Boys.
My first gig was so epic and such a special one to get to, really, that people don't even believe it when I tell them that I was at the Smiths on their first, possibly only ever, Irish tour in 1983. They were just out, they just had a couple of hits. What Difference Does It Make was in the charts when they played in 83 in Limerick. So we were 14, going down from the Christian Brothers school to see this, you know. Of course, the thing with Morrissey at the time was he was you had to throw him flowers on stage. So we robbed a chapel at the Christian Brothers in Sexton Street and brought the flowers down and threw him onto the stage. But what really kind of blew us away was the Smiths had this kind of little travelling army of fans from Manchester, 20 or 30 kids who followed them around, went to all their shows, and it was just the look and the kind of cool with these kids that just turned our heads, you know. They had the full-on Smiths look, the paisley shirts and the kind of quiffed standing up hair and the 501s baggy and the dancing even, and everything was just right. And it was like, the great thing at that age is you have to look got yourself by about the following Tuesday, you know. You're down in the second-hand shops looking for the paisley shirts and all of that stuff.
How's that for street cred and notions?
It turned us all into very sniffy, very arty kind of teenage kids. Also, they were kind of, there was something recognisably Irish in there, you know. Like, all four were from Mancunian Irish backgrounds. I've a friend who maintains that if you were casting a film and the part you had to cast was County Mayo barman, you could cast Morrissey. Because if you think about him, like in his present day, he absolutely could be pulling points in a pub in Mayo for you.
And quite possibly firing the peanuts across the bar. From Roots, Bank Holiday Monday. And with Ray in Studio One, the big music one, Fathers and Sons, he was joined by Mick and Liam O'Connor, and here, Cormac and Brendan Begley. They talked about the power of music and also being bullied just ever so slightly into learning an instrument.
Yeah, we used to have to go to lessons, or I used to have to go with them to bars and play the one tune I knew, and then you'd sit the rest of the evening eating potatoes and drinking Coke. And on one occasion he asked me to go playing, and I had the great idea to get a penknife and open up the side of the concertina. It was the first time I opened up the instrument to learn how the mechanics work,
right,
so that I could break it, so that I wouldn't have to go with him.
Right.
So it got to that point, and I think when Dad had to foot the bill of fixing the concertina, I think he realised when the repairer said to him that didn't happen naturally.
By accident.
Yeah, by accident. Yeah, yes, yeah. I think he eased off a bit. And then I was inspired by my older brother, like, started playing my cousins.
Yeah. I remember one evening, Cormac got the concertina and Brian got a guitar, and I just let him at it.
Yeah.
And I think we used to have a lot of parties in the house as well, and we had so many musicians there, and they could see that the fun that we were having, that it was about fun, and it was never competition based. I never brought him to a flakeyold, never brought him to a competition. Just the fun. I mean, in the Irish music, you have three types of music: gallantry, galtry, swantry, and it incorporates all the moods. And if you're happy, it's a great way to express it. If you're magical, you could swantry and galtry. If you're not feeling too good, if you play music for a while, your mood changes and it heals you.
And then they played, and it is on this set of reels from Cormac Begley and Liam O'Connor on fiddle that we will leave you for this week. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.